Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and Dixon High School School Resource Officer Mark Dallas. I think we can now recognize him as the un-Scott Peterson.
Yes, exactly. Yesterday around 8 o'clock in the morning, they're having practice for graduation. They're in the main gym. And a former student, a 19-year-old kid, Matt Milby, whatever his name is, walked in with a gun and started shooting. And the resource officer, instead of running away from him, ran toward him and took down, shot one shot in the 19-year-old's shoulder and stopped countless people from getting killed.
One of the gym teachers ran in, told everybody to go. He looked white as a ghost. And then all of a sudden, there's just teachers saying, go, 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 get out of here.
And it was, amazing. Parents ran to the scene, of course, to make sure that their kids were okay. And they were so grateful for this officer.
I feel like we're a fairly safe town, but all it takes is one child to snap.
You see it all over the news, and you never think it would happen to you.
And the weird thing is this suspect's mother went to high school with the police officer who shot her son. Her name is,
Small town living. The suspect has been charged with three Class X felonies of aggravated discharge of a firearm, bond set at $2 million. He remains hospitalized as of last night.
And the mom, she didn't really talk about her son. She said she hadn't seen him in a few days, but she was grateful that the officer didn't kill her son.
I honestly would have to tell him thank you, because most cases they would kill them.
Yeah, perhaps it was fortunate. I'm sure he wasn't aiming for the shoulder, but regardless, as you said, ran to the scene and ran to the assailant and disabled him and likely saved lives, who knows how many in the process. So inspired stuff. At the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Dixon Mayor Lee Arellano about this some more. And it's interesting, too, against the backdrop of what's careening around the halls of power in Springfield. You remember after Parkland,
yeah,
Chris Welch, who is a state rep, Democrat from Hillside, Proviso Township area. Has he stopped beating his girlfriend? I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know if he has. You have to bring that up with Hillside Police. Introduced legislation to reallocate funding for school resource officers like Mark Dallas to mental health services, including social workers or other practices designed to promote healthy environments in school. Would you have rather had a, not that there's any opposition to social workers or all the wraparound services, but we live in a world of finite resources, although you wouldn't know that from the way we spend on K-12 education here to no particular effect. But yesterday at Dixon High School, would you rather have had a therapist or Mark Dallas?
I'd rather have Mark Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a member of the Dixon Police Department for a long time, and he was placed on administrative leave since he was involved in the shooting, but they said that he was very calm. He was the hero in the hallways. Another school shooting, but this one's not about lives lost, but lives saved. And, of course, NBC, good old nightly news, attacked the guns instead of the person carrying the guns. They talked to the shooter's friend.
But I knew he was a little crazy when it came to guns. He had a couple guns, and they weren't just your average 22.
He said that he had long guns later on, that was the culprit. And his mom said that her son has felt ostracized at the school, and he left to finish his credits outside of class.
And what was the the gun in the possession of the assailant? Yeah. I haven't seen that
identified
yet. They released
that? Yeah, they haven't identified
it. I haven't seen that identified yet. But and just, again, contrasting this related story, Mike Scott mentioned this yesterday. Scott Peterson, since I mentioned Mark Dallas, is the anti-Scott Peterson. Scott Peterson, of course, the coward of Broward, right?
Yeah. He didn't run in when the gunfire was going on. He was a little schoolgirl.
I got
sat outside.
I got this space over here.
Sat outside the building. Like, don't come here. I'm just going to use this pole to hide behind.
He resigning after the Parkland massacre, and is now enjoying his $8,700 a month
what
state pension.
Okay, wait. $8,700 a month. Mm-hmm. Now, in Florida, is your pension taxed?
Well, there's no income tax
Florida.
Oh.
Wow.
But, I mean, I'm not promoting that. So that's a pretty handsome pension. Florida doesn't have the unfunded pension liabilities we do here in Illinois, but...
But don't you think they're heading that way with that kind of a pension? And that's for life.
That is for life. Retired at the age of 55 with an $8,700 a month pension.
Living high on the hog. That's a lot of money.
Raises a whole range of issues, but we'll stick on the public safety one for now.
Considering what he did, should he get his pension taken away? 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer.
Well, he hasn't been charged with a crime.
I know, but just, you know, in the court of public opinion, my gosh, I mean.
Well, it's difficult to confer it's difficult to rescind benefits conferred based on public opinion. That's a difficult standard to abide, but
It makes me mad.
I understand the sentiment. That makes people mad and disgusted, what happened in Parkland. And makes people and encourages people. We've got something to remind ourselves here with this incident at Dixon. Good guy. I mean, it's a cliche, but all cliches have some basis in truth. Good guy with a gun versus bad guy with a gun.
And who won that fight? The good guy with the gun.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy talking about that shooting incident at Dixon High School yesterday, where the boyhood home of Ronald Reagan
exactly
is located, although he was born in Tampico.
Is it Tampico or Tampico?
I'm going to say...
What are you going to say, Laurel or Yanni? Tampico? What do you think?
Tampico.
I've always thought it was Tampico.
Potato, potato. Is it...
My sister's from Galesburg, so I think my family being from Galesburg area, I think we're right.
Is it Marseille or Marcellus, Illinois?
Ooh. Oh, it's Marcellus.
Yeah, that's right.
For sure.
Is it Cairo or Cairo?
Oh, it's Cairo.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Is it Red Bud or Red Bud?
Red Bud. Red Bud. Just like Orson Welles said it.
Yes.
Take a couple calls. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan, Peterson, and he's not a coward. He's a con man. They should set an example so that it doesn't happen again. These people, when you carry a badge and a gun, you've got one job. It's to take and protect the others, the innocent that don't have guns and that. He proved himself to be a con man that. Now, other people see. I'm a part-time instructor, and I don't have any guns in my home, and I don't belong to the NRA. But if they trained me and they let me carry somebody a little piece, I'd run to it. I'd sign a document that would state that, hey, I will do it. When they were having responders, I signed up to be a first responder and all that kind of thing. Some people will go and some people won't. That guy should not get that pension. They should do something to actually punish him so that others that are con artists pretending, because that's false, give you false hope that you're protected. You're not protected. The only purpose of that guy being there was for that situation.
Yeah.
And he let all those kids get killed.
Thanks for the call, Craig. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, maybe like a dereliction of duty exemption for your pension payout or something like that. It's difficult, but certainly can understand why people recoil at him enjoying a six-figure pension after what happened at Parkland.
And what he made to be a school resource officer, he was paid $101,879 to do that job, and he still didn't save children.
Or attempt to,
right.
Yeah. Chuck and Delavan.
Oh, Chuck.
Yeah, but he didn't have carpal tunnel from writing traffic tickets. Hey, you guys down here in Illinois, the police officers make that same amount of money. Like, once again, I don't want to beat a dead horse or anything, but, you know, when I'm up there hanging out in the bars in Lake Geneva and stuff, them guys will pay that $3.75, $4.25 for a beer. They make just as much money as those guys down there. People got to reel in these pensions. I only get $1,000 a month from working in a steel mills for 25 years.
Oh,
thank
really?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
See, Chuck from Delavan deserves $8,700 a month.
Deserves.
Good guys like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Deserves. That's dangerous word.
Police officer working in the steel mills.
Anytime
what
you
would
think,
you rather do?
Anytime you think about yourself and you say, I deserve this or that, just remember Milton Friedman's great line on that. Deserves. Who deserves what and who determines it? We should be thankful we don't get what we deserve. Zing. Dan in Libertyville.
Yeah.
The one thing we have to remember is that the Supreme Court has ruled 2 times.
Yeah, I know.
Government officials, be it the police or FBI, whatever form of law enforcement that you have there at that time, is not obligated to protect you from imminent harm. The Supreme Court has ruled 2 times it is the citizens' responsibility to protect themselves from imminent harm. Hence, the need for the Second Amendment.
Very good point,
the
Dan.
Why they also ruled you can't say people can't conceal carry or open carry. You have to allow one or the other because the court has said the government's not responsible. You have to allow the citizens to be responsible for themselves constitutionally so they can protect their right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate it. Yeah, government is never responsible, is it? It's just always mistakes were made. They make themselves derelictions of duty, derelict themselves. So it's a fair point that Dan makes. Good reminder.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, arguably a nice piece of crisis communications by Rudy Giuliani, but I would say arguably because that is the case only if Rudy G and the rest of Trump's legal team, including the president, don't think for a second this is the time to let their guard down against Robert Mueller.
What are you doing to celebrate, by the way? Because it's the 1 year anniversary of Robert Mueller being assigned to this case. Going to have some people over?
Yeah.
Maybe go have a cigar with Sean and Elmwood Park?
I hope they do some kind of dinner or some, you know, kind of memorialize this. Who thought they would make it a year? And they have.
I didn't think it would last. I mean, I thought that they'd break up, you know, 6 months into it.
Giuliani saying Mueller's got nothing. This thing is basically over.
We're going to see what kind of legal remedies are available to us, including if they subpoena us, challenge the subpoena. But I don't think they agree to the process question, which is the same reason they can't indict him, they can't issue a subpoena to him. And remember, Clinton opposed a subpoena, and then he voluntarily complied.
Yeah, that's he's right about the DOJ memo, and I'll take him at his word that Mueller indicated several weeks back to Trump's legal team that he would follow that that memo as it pertains to indictment. But here's the thing: before you pop the champagne, remember something that Andy McCarthy over at National Review has said from the outset. This is never about an indictment. It's about impeachment. The end game was always impeachment. So because Mueller has said, again, taking Giuliani at face value, that he is not going to indict Trump, and maybe that he won't even subpoena him, although despite that DOJ memo, that certainly could be challenged, leveled up to the high court, But even if those things do not happen, no indictment and no impeachment, you know, publicly taunting Mueller, sort of, by saying basically the investigation's over, I don't think Mueller and his team think it's over. And the end game is impeachment. So you could have Mueller essentially say in his final report, we have found evidence of wrongdoing. We have concluded the president engaged in wrongdoing in this area or that area. And while we don't believe we are in power to indict a sitting president, there are other remedies outside a court of law, impeachment being a political process. Mueller still has the opportunity and potentially, given sort of the lax oversight by Rod Rosenstein, the bandwidth to put Trump in a trick bag and give Democrats the ammunition they need to continue to beat the impeachment drum. So while,
but if they lose in the midterm, or not lose, well, if the House remains Republican, do you think they're going to keep beating this drum?
Well, they may keep beating it if there's evidence that or pronouncements from Team Mueller that give them ammunition, right? But it's just important to point out, as much as this is sort of being treated as like a bombshell statement from Rudy, it doesn't really change the dynamic at play. It doesn't end the investigation. I don't think it. There's any reason to believe that it expedites the conclusion of Mueller's work or the imminence of his final report on the matter. So I think we're still a long way away from tying a bow on this.
Yeah, and Rudy Giuliani also said on Fox News last night that firing Mueller was not Trump's plan A or plan B or plan C, even if the probe doesn't wrap up. And he also said that Trump didn't collude with Russia because campaign never used dirt on Hillary Clinton. Which yesterday, I don't know if you saw that 2,000 pages? Yeah, of transcripts from the Trump Tower meeting. And I read some of it. There's really no there. I mean, if anything, they did talk about Russian adoption because that always helps a broken marriage. Then it seemed like Jared seemed agitated that there wasn't more dirt being delivered on Hillary Clinton.
All of this, though, is that they're just looking for pieces of possible evidence that they can that can be used to keep this story alive. So, I mean, I saw a number of left outlets, Donald Trump Jr. after the meeting with that Russian lawyer.
Yeah.
He made calls to a blocked number. We don't know who the blocked number is. But there is it has been stipulated that Trump's
has a block.
Yeah, his home phone number or something that's blocked. So could it have? I mean, all they need is the bits and pieces that a spy novelist uses to construct a narrative to continue to push theirs.
Right.
And so that's what you have to recognize. So I think it's good spin by Rudy to bring this up, so long as they're not letting their guard down, I guess is my point, because it does put pressure, public pressure on Mueller. It does lob the ball into Mueller's court to respond or not respond. It does deflate some of the excitement for the layman of the left who think that Trump is going to be in prison before the midterms. But I think we're still a long way from this coming to a conclusion. Bruno in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, this is entirely about the midterm elections. If there's a blue wave or even a mini blue wave, Mueller stays at it. If there's if Trump winds out coming out of the midterm elections in a strengthened position, he fires Sessions, Rosenstein, Mueller. He pardons Flynn, Papadopoulos, Cohen, Manafort. So it's all about the midterm elections.
Well, thanks for the call, Bruno. That certainly could. I mean, the outcome of the midterm elections is important with respect to all this. Yes. The idea that Trump then just has a, red wedding with everybody. I don't think so. And let's remember that Trump could be in a strengthened position after the midterms. That's possible. Or even just in the same position with Republican control of both chambers. And then immediately the 2020 campaign starts. And ostensibly he'll be running for re-election. So there'll still be political considerations after the midterms. The most important political consideration for Trump, his own.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
So, Dan, I asked you if you've heard Yanni or Laurel, and you asked me who Laurel was.
I mean, of course I know Yanni. I mean, he's one of the great musicians of the last 500 years.
And Yanni, here's Yanni.
And he dated Linda Evans.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. They had the same hairdo. All right, so do you hear Yanni or Laurel? Listen carefully.
Laurel. 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 Laurel.
What do you hear?
Laurel.
See, it does sound... On TV, the first time I heard it, I swear I heard Yanni, and then that's indisputable. That is Laurel. Don't you think?
Yes.
So, but a lot of people hear Yanni.
What the hell? What are we talking about?
So somebody started this on, like, do you hear Yanni or Laurel? It was this social media thing, and it spread like hotcakes yesterday. And then
do you hear Yanni or Laurel? Is this your black ice versus black guys?
No. Oh, exactly. Charles Barkley weighed in.
Ready?
First of all,
please play it.
Laurel. 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 Laurel.
Shaq, what did you hear?
Laurel.
What did you hear?
I heard them both combined, but I'm going to just go with Yanni.
You heard Yanni?
I heard Laurel.
I heard Laurel.
What did you hear,
Chuck? I heard
Chuck?
Laurel.
I thought I heard Donut. I'm telling you the truth.
No, you didn't.
He thought he heard Donut.
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah. But I don't, it's the same frequency, but it just depends on what you hear and how you hear it. But yeah, I heard Laurel, too.
So is there,
yesterday
is
I heard Yanni.
Is there science behind this? Is there a different way people process Yanni and Laurel? So what's the science?
I don't know, but I'll get back to you on
that. All right, very good. And otherwise, people are just going to discuss. This is an internet sensation.
Exactly.
Laurel or Yanni, what do you hear?
Yeah. Well, I heard Laurel. But yesterday, I swear, I heard Yanni.
You know what I hear? I hear it. It's coming across loud and clear.
Yeah, what do you hear?
The decline of Western civilization. I don't know if you... Did you pick up on that?
Wait, I think I hear that too. Black ice, not black guys. Black ice.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And new book out from the American Psychological Association. Something happened in our town for kids 4 to 8.
4 to 8 years old?
Well, from American Psychological Association. Probably make its way into a grade school near you.
Oh, great. Do you have the highlights for me? Do you have the cliff notes?
Something happened in our town for children ages 4 to 8 intended to spark a discussion about racial injustice in America by focusing on the shooting of a black man by a white police officer. A better title of the book would be, according to Bob Woodson, who wrote this piece about the book in The Hill, "When You See Blue, Run If You're Black." While the authors claim that the publication presents a balanced view because it depicts the reactions to the local shooting by a black family and a white family, both sets of parents tell their children the same message: police hate blacks and are not to be trusted. In the book, the white mother tells her little girl that the shooting was, quote, part of a pattern of being nice to white people and mean to black people. It's an unfair pattern.
Well, guess what Peyton and Eli are studying right now at Blaine? The torture victims of John Burge. I mean, they have a segment of their history class on that.
They're doing a Chicago history class?
Yes. They are. Hold on.
How are they doing on American history?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you're learning about, what do you know about World War II? What do you know about World War I?
What do you know about the country's founding?
What about the Constitution? Have you studied that yet? No, they're studying, and then they had one of the survivors. come and speak.
Well, I'm not, you know, that doesn't offend me, but it's the context of what that is displacing.
Well,
right?
The list of priorities, right.
In something happened in our town, the little white girl's older sister says, quote, some white people think most black men and boys are dangerous, even though they're not. It wasn't a mistake. The cops shot him because he was black. Meanwhile, in the book, the black father tells his son that the policeman will not go to jail and that, quote, you can't always count on them, cops, to do what's right. Cops stick up for each other, and they don't like black men. This is pretty good instruction for 4 to 8 year olds to poison them against police as a general matter and treat and have them look at blue and say and see, you know, racist or see oppressor. Right. Particularly interesting in big, diverse urban centers like, say, Chicago, where nearly half the police department is minorities, blacks and Latinos. I still don't get an answer to this question about blacks and Latinos being oppressors of other blacks and Latinos. I mean, is it possible? Sure. Is it systemic? Is it institutional? Seems like a difficult case to make out. Our friend Jason Hill, who's a philosophy professor at DePaul, black gentleman from Jamaica, he has a in-depth piece in Commentary Magazine and entitled My Black Lives Matter Problem, and he details a number of them. One on police and violence in the black community. And he starts off by recounting a conversation recently had with a colleague of his who's a retired professor who once taught at University of New York, now teaches inside prisons. He's a Marxist. Jason Hill's a capitalist and a classical liberal, or maybe a libertarian. Maybe he would describe himself as a libertarian. So they have very different views on this and race relations as well. Jason Hill writes, when some black folks complain that white people don't value black lives, I often ask, what exactly do you mean? Too many black Americans are reluctant to hold other black people accountable for the horrific crimes they're committing against one another. Members of Black Lives Matter want white people to esteem black lives and value the humanity of black people when they themselves can't condemn and express moral outrage at those who maim and kill black children in the course of gang warfare, senseless street violence, drive-by shootings. Why do white people have a larger moral responsibility to care about black people than black people have to care about their own lives? And why are blacks in need of special white nurturance? Good question. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Concerned at all about the propaganda being promoted by the American Psychological Association, given that that imprimatur will ensure that it becomes part of grade school curriculums. Mark my words. So do you care about 4 to 8 year olds being propagandized to be antagonistic towards police, to see police as oppressor? Or are you going to pretend that this stuff doesn't matter what happens in schools and we'll just continue blithely going along and then complain about the consequences for what we didn't address?
Well, it's brainwashing. That's why you really, if you have kids in elementary school or even in high school, you have got to check in with them and find out what they're learning and then ask them what their opinions are. You know, like, okay, well, what did you think of John Birch? Well, he was a white officer who targeted mostly only black people. I'm like, well, he was a bad person. And regardless, yes, he forced people into confessions, put typewriter covers over people's head, chained them, and did horrible things. But not every officer is like that.
Yes. In the something happened in our town.
Yeah. How does it end, Dan?
The little girl sums up the lessons her father, the little black girl sums up the lessons her father has taught her, saying, quote, white people hate black people. So that's good.
That doesn't help race relations in this country.
Oh, you don't think so?
No.
Neither do incidents like this that go underreported. This out of South Carolina, an NAACP president of South Carolina is pulled over by a police officer.
Yeah.
In Timmonsville, South Carolina. His name is Reverend Jared Moultrie. We know this occurred because he posted on Facebook about the police stop. Tonight, I was racially profiled by Timminsville officer because I was driving, all caps, because I was driving a Mercedes-Benz and going home in a nice neighborhood. Moultrie recounted the conversation he had with the officer in his social media post. He said the officer asked him if there were any drugs inside his car. Moultrie also said the officer told him, I'm doing you a favor tonight, not taking you to jail or writing you a ticket. Well, this is where body cam videos come in handy for police.
Oh.
And dash cam videos come in handy for police because that Facebook post, of course, generated a big reaction.
I'm sure people called for that police officer to be fired and
they want an
internal investigation.
Sure, and this is the kind of fodder for Black Lives Matter and the American Psychological Association to reinforce their agitprop against police. They went ahead and released that dash cam body cam video. And here's what actually happened at the stop. This is a couple of cuts from the raw footage, of which I watched the entirety. Here's the police officer walking up to Reverend Moultrie after stopping him.
Hey, how are you? I'm all right. I'm Officer Miles with the Timminsville Police Department.
Yes, sir.
Got your license, search proof, and insurance on you. Okay, that's fine. Go right ahead. Are you the owner of the motor vehicle?
Yes, sir. I just transferred.
You just transferred? Okay. What's your name?
Jamie Moultrie.
Okay. You got your drive plus on it. It's done. The reason why I'm coming in contact with you is whenever you took the left right here, you didn't signal. Okay, that's the only reason why I'm coming in contact with you, okay?
Mm-hmm. So he failed to signal, pulls him over, asks for, you know, license or registration.
Yeah, it seems very cordial, very friendly.
And then he gives him license registration, and there's a problem with the registration. The tags are still to a car he previously had, not this car.
Ooh, I got a ticket for that once. You got to be compliant.
So that's how this exchange, that sets up this exchange, after which the officer bids him farewell.
Well, Mr. Bolger, here you go, okay? Registration. Try not to drive the car no more until you get the proper documentation, because this registration has to come back to 1992, okay, GMC truck. It's even in the system as that, too. But what I'm saying, you got to have the proper registration and everything and insurance and all that stuff to actually indicate that plate comes back to this motor vehicle, okay? Because when I run the plate, it's still coming back to this. It's not coming back to your car.
Okay, I understand that. But look, I just bought the car the other day. I switched the tags.
Well, you probably need to go to the DMV and ask them how come it's not registered in the state of South Carolina Department of Motor Vehicles. It's still coming back to that truck.
I understand that, but this is what I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
I switched the tags from the truck to the car. They told me at DMV, the dealer put that on there to show that the tag's going to be transferred.
Right.
And all I need to do is keep this registration in there, and this bill is there.
They told you wrong. You got to have the proper documentation in your motor vehicle that actually matches the car that you're operating on South Carolina highways in order for it to actually be legal to operate on South Carolina highways. They told you wrong, okay?
All right.
All right. Other than that, there's your driver's license. Just make sure you wear your seatbelt at all times while operating the motor vehicle on South Carolina highways and drive safe, okay?
Oh, my gosh. So the Reverend's a liar, because clearly what he said happened did not happen at all. And you can't just transfer tags from one car to another. I mean, that's, he doesn't need the DMV to tell him that. He should know that.
Well,
that
I mean,
is a huge faux pas.
Yeah, but I mean, but the interaction
still,
is the
interaction,
issue.
Right.
This was not a life and death situation, obviously. And was the officer professional? Was there, is there any evidence of racial profiling or treating him in anything less than respectful manner?
Yeah, he sounded so caring, like, you know, keep your seatbelt fastened, stay safe out there. He was nothing if not showed him the utmost respect. And he could have taken him in because you're not supposed to just transfer tags on different cars.
I don't know.
Mercedes-Benz to a GMC, those are two different cars, but whatever.
So incidents, stops like this that happen, you know, a million times a day in America, left on the cutting room floor with respect to the book, Something Happened in Our Town. Lucy in Lowell, Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hello. I just wanted to speak to the thing that you were talking about the other day
just earlier about the having the parents check on the things. That's why they want to go to computerized textbooks, because that way the parents can't come back and check on what the kids have seen in the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're right about that, Lucy. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Story out of Fort Worth, a different topic area, but to Lucy's point, nearly 2 years to the day that Fort Worth School District announced its infamous transgender policy, parents discovered the district has been teaching 5,000 sixth graders per year and, among other things, transgender ideology since 2016, despite the district's repeal of the transgender policy. Parents at this McLean sixth grade campus recently started hearing jaw-dropping reports from their students' health class. The focus of these lessons is for students to learn the consequences of sexual activity and the benefits of abstinence. It only means to totally avoid pregnancy, STDs, and so forth. Sounds good, except when the students started coming home and sharing what they were actually learning, it didn't match up with the notice the parents had received. So the teachers and administrators were purposely misdirecting parents as to, here's the stated instruction we're going to provide the kids, versus what the kids are saying they're actually receiving in terms of instruction.
Mm-hmm. This is why people homeschool. Hey, quickly, back to this Timmonsville Police Department, you know, this traffic stop. What really makes me, this guy was, he was the head of the NAACP. He's a pastor, he's a community leader, and he blatantly lied. You know that he also said that his wife and grandchild were in the car, and he filed a complaint saying he didn't want them to move because the officer looked as if he might shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
He also made mention that he kept asking what neighborhood he's from and threatened to put him in jail in reference to something dealing with the registration to the vehicle. I mean, that is just completely opposite of what transpired. He should step down from the NAACP if he has a leadership position. And people that go to his church should question authority.
Right.
What is he preaching on the weekend?
Yeah,
really?
not just authority in uniform, authority at the pulpit or authority at the... in these civic organizations like the NAACP, too.
That guy got busted. Line. Ooh.
Jim in Tampa, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call, guys. Who is fighting back on this, and how are we fighting back? It's one thing for us to point all this stuff out and to make note of it, but people want to take action. People want to do something. They don't want to go crazy, but people want to say, wait a minute, come on, this is ridiculous. Now, how can I fight back?
Well,
how can I fight back?
Yeah, I mean, here's an example here locally. New Trier Neighbors, this organization that was started up on the North Shore, to concern parents in New Trier Township that don't hew to the orthodoxy of opinion, the leftist opinion on the North Shore, in the schools, everywhere, frankly. And one of the things they did, in addition to bringing in speakers and organizing people and having conversations about topics like this, is they start attending school board meetings. How many people attend a school board meeting? I mean, this is, again...
local.
Right. This is where 80% of your property tax dollars go, 95% if you're in New Trier, and how many people actually pay attention to what's going on and frankly, provide a civic check on the adults in charge of institutions as important as schools versus sort of, going on reputation and, a little bit of what your kids tell you they're learning and maybe the parent-teacher conference. And that's enough for me to have a handle on it. Well, there's myriad examples that suggest that's not enough for you to have a handle on it.
No doubt. Local. Everybody, people just need to take that step.
Thanks, Jim.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
I don't know about how the Brits feel about Americans now. This whole royal wedding's becoming quite the spectacle. We've learned this morning that Meghan Markle's father is not going to be walking her down the aisle. It's official. But also last night, her half-sister, Samantha Grant, who you see all over the news, who's not going to the wedding, she was involved in a car accident. She was trying to avoid the paparazzi. She broke her ankle, fractured her knee, and she's currently hospitalized.
Oh.
You're not going to send her a get-well card? And also, we're learning about her bridesmaids. These aren't really bridesmaids. This is romper room hour. She's having a 2-year-old. Yeah, that'll work out. She's having her friends' kids and her goddaughters, which are 3, 2, that's going to be great, 4, 5, and 7. What could go wrong? I mean, why would you want that? Just walk down the aisle. You know, you don't need to have bridesmaids that are that young because they're not going to listen and they're not going to do well. Okay, have I lost you? Have I ever had you on this? You know you're going to watch. I'm waking up at 4 in the morning on Saturday.
Are you going to be there?
No, I'm going to watch it.
Oh, I thought maybe you were going to some kind of remote broadcast.
Be the stalker?
Kind of Melissa and Joan Rivers wrapped in one for the royal wedding.
Well, you're not going to be able to avoid the royal wedding this weekend. Because
boring!
No, everyone's going to be talking about it. And you guys who say you don't care, I know you're going to sneak a peek to see what she's wearing to find out who's going to walk her down the aisle.
If I could borrow from the immortal words of Lord... But everybody's like crystal Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair. Thank you very much, Lord.
Thank you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and obviously a very frightening incident yesterday at Dixon High School, where you had a school resource officer engage a would-be shooter, a 19-year-old former student, wounding the shooter, and potentially saving untold number of lives for the kids that were doing a walkthrough for graduation.
Yeah, the headlines are a massacre avoided because of the bravery of the police officer. The 19-year-old kid shot at the police officer, according to reports, and the police officer returned fire. He went to stop the gunman as opposed to other resource officers who would run away.
One of the gym teachers ran in, told everybody to go. He looked white as a ghost. And then all of a sudden, there's just teachers saying, go, 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 get out of here.
And they're also, commending the teachers, too, who did a good job of, shuffling kids out of the area.
Mark Dallas, according to reports, was praised and thanked by more than 100 people who gathered along the Rock River Wednesday night after the A would-be shooter was taken into custody. He was charged with 3 Class X felonies last night and is on $2 million bond. For more on this topic, updating us, we're pleased to be joined by the mayor of Dixon. He is Lee Arellano, who, by the way, has a service record of his own. He served our country in the armed forces. Lee, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Just kind of give us a sense of yesterday, what you were doing as the mayor and what the town was doing in conjunction with the police and the school district when the incident occurred, and then update us on what's happened subsequently.
Absolutely. the first thing to say is, our police department and the school district handled it immensely well. I mean, obviously incidents like that happen so fast. And even as quick a response time as we have, our police department is probably a minute away from the high school. That wouldn't have been enough, if Officer Dallas hadn't been there. So a lot of it, the key stuff was done by Officer Dallas and actually by the gym teacher, who was the first person to intercept this shooter as he came in. He was just really, really close to the gym where the practices were taken for graduation. The gym teacher had to pop out for something, saw the shooter. I believe that's when the shooter first started, actually firing shots. He was already in the school. Officer Dallas heard it, came running, which, is exactly what you pray happened, that the resource officer's there. Comes running to the scene. That's exactly what he did. Shooter saw him. My understanding is he took off running. As they were running, he chased him outside the building, fired some shots at Officer Dallas. At that point, Officer returned fire, was able to take him down. Luckily, nobody was injured. And from that point, it's just about coordinating a response. The teachers did their part, getting students barricaded, getting them out, getting them to safety. So many departments responded. Everything from the federal agencies like the ATF, you know, which is, you know, working on tracking down how this guy got that weapon, to, you know, the sheriff, everybody. It was amazing response.
What do you know? What weapon he used, and was he, and how much ammunition he had on him?
I'm not sure they've released any of those details yet. We don't believe it was, you know, it was some home gun. Let me put it that way. But they're not sure yet. I think that part they're still investigating.
And was he supposed to be there? Because I'm reading conflicting reports. Was he expelled from Dixon High School taking night classes, and was he supposed to be a part of the graduation?
I don't know. I don't know the details on that. I don't believe he was expelled. That's not my understanding. I saw some reports stating that. Mm-hmm. My understanding was a little different than that, is that he had some challenges, was pulled out, was still, I think, actively working. Him and his family were actively working on what could be done. And, you know, I don't know if he was actually supposed to walk or not.
Going back to how this unfolded, the gym teacher. So you said the gym teacher went outside and he first saw him, and that's where the first engagement occurred. So give us whatever detail you have on that engagement, because that's been underreported.
Yeah, no, I think so. And obviously it's still very preliminary. But my understanding is one of the teachers had to step out of, I believe it was the gym or the office or wherever that teacher was at. You know, the shooter was kind of inbound with not very good intent. You know, saw him, you know, I think recognized that a problem was underway. You know, I don't know exactly what that scene looked like, but that's when the shooter, you know, pulled up and started to make his move. And those shots, to my understanding, are what our resource officer heard.
Was he shooting at the gym teacher, do we know, or?
Or at the students?
That's my understanding. You know, I'm not, you know, the details are still very preliminary. Did he start, you know, shooting indiscriminately? Was he shooting generally, specifically at the teacher? You know, that part I can't speak to yet. But what seems pretty clear is that's the point at which shooting started. And I think for the students, that's a pretty big deal, because he was, you know, just feet away from getting into the gym. And, you know, the students were gathered in there. You know, they weren't individually in classrooms. Right. A huge mass of our seniors were gathered in the gym to go through practices. You know, one of the things that was interesting talking to my city manager is his daughter was one of the first groups of people right around that door. So, you know, things like that are really hitting home. Yeah. And in fact, it's incredible.
What do you think you're going to do as a city to honor Officer Mark Dallas?
Oh, man, that, you know, that was something talked about already. You know, even on Facebook, you could see, like, this, you know, he shouldn't have to pay for meals, you know, all this stuff going on. Aww. People are just so incredibly appreciative of how he responded. And, you know, obviously there's an element of, you know, you do your job, but extraordinary way to do your job. Sometimes the job becomes extraordinary, and Officer Dallas really rose to that occasion.
What do we know, what do you know, maybe some more local knowledge? And, you know, obviously the media outlets interviewed some people in Dixon, but... on the 19-year-old in custody who was the assailant in the case, is there any more kind of local color you can give on him? Was this an individual known? Was he known to be, sort of disaffected from the community, that sort of thing?
You know, just because of where the investigation's at, I probably can't comment on any of that stuff.
Okay.
You know, that's I don't want to get in the way of the DA. You know, as you mentioned, there's some felonies charged, and I think they're going to take care of that.
Yeah, his mom had said that he was ostracized at school and left to finish his credits outside of his class. And what's strange is, I know in a small town everybody knows everybody, but Julie Milby knows the police officer who shot her son, and she was grateful to him yesterday for not killing her son. Did you hear that interview?
Yeah, I did see some of that, you know, and... some of the things that have come, as you mentioned, there's some conflicting reports, and from my vantage point, sometimes you just have to watch things unfold and shake your head at some of it. Obviously, people are trying to get out as much information as possible, but some of it I'm not sure is quite accurate. But then again, you know, that's why we have the systems in place we do. And I'll say it's pretty amazing knowing what's happened in some other communities. What I really felt was relief. I mean, it was a stressful day. It was a long day. There was a lot of coordination. But through the whole thing, I was just incredibly relieved because everybody lived through the day. And that's something that we were incredibly blessed at here in Dixon.
I know no class today, which is understandable. When are the kids going to go back to school? Do you know?
You know, I talked to the school superintendent. I think their goal is to get things as normalized as quickly as possible. Obviously, they've arranged for some counseling services and things of that nature. So I think they're going to give it a couple days, and I'm not sure if they're going to be back at it on Monday or if they're going to try even earlier than that. You know, they feel the students have been through enough, and they want to keep it as on track as possible.
Yeah.
So I think either by the end of this week or the beginning of next week, they're going to start getting things moving again.
And, Mayor, I wanted you to hear this and our listeners to hear. It's a student, Evelyn Ebersol, who is so grateful for Officer Mark Dallas.
I think it was very brave of him. I think you hear stories of, like, officers hiding, not doing anything, and that's not what he did. He went and he, like, faced the problem head on.
I mean, there must have been a lot of tears, and just when parents were reunited with their kids yesterday is probably something you'll never forget.
No, no, and he, I mean, he truly is a hero. The day just could have gone so differently if Officer Dallas hadn't been there. If Mark hadn't been where he was and if he hadn't responded in the way he did, there are a lot of families, an entire community that would be dealing with an entirely different incident. And unfortunately, we know what that incident looks like because we've seen it in other communities. So, you know, he's amazing, and we're so glad he was there and was able to do what he did.
He is Dixon Mayor Lee Arellano. Lee, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
So that's Yanni or Laurel, this thing?
Yeah.
Yanni or Laurel?
Which I introduced you to about an hour ago, and you said, well, who's Laurel? But it's not a guest that we're having on in the 8 o'clock hour. You have to choose between Yanni or Laurel.
Laurel. Laurel. Laurel.
It's just about frequencies. If you're younger, you're supposed to be able to process high frequencies, so everyone who's young hears Yanni, and then people who are old like you, Dan.
Nobody hears Yanni.
Or,
that is, it
no,
couldn't
I
be
heard, I
clear.
Swear to God, I heard Yanni the first time.
Well, that's just
right,
destroys your theory about young versus old.
hey.
Now, what
no,
about
I felt
this?
Young when I first got up. Now I'm old. Yes.
I've got a corollary to the Yanni versus Laurel.
What?
How about Yanni playing the flute versus Ron Burgundy playing the flute? Which do you hear?
Okay.
Hold on. I'm not hearing it right. Hold on.
Or
this is relaxing.
Nightingale.
Look, I'm at the spa.
Oh my goodness.
Master
nice.
Of the pan flute.
Yeah. What about? So that now that's a game.
Okay, we'll make it go viral.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're marking the one-year anniversary of the Mueller investigation, and Rudy Giuliani, part of Trump's legal team, of course, said on the occasion of this one-year anniversary, basically, the thing's over.
It's the Mueller-versary.
Mueller-versary.
Okay, get it right. Yeah, last night, Beltway Giuliani was on Fox News.
We're going to see what kind of legal remedies are available to us, including if they subpoena us, challenge the subpoena. But I don't think they agree to the process question, which is the same reason they can't indict him, they can't issue a subpoena to him. And remember, Clinton opposed a subpoena, and then he voluntarily complied.
Just remember, before we go
have a party
celebrating in conjunction with the royal wedding,
exactly,
which I know you'll be celebrating. This has always been, the end game has always been impeachment, not indictment. So Mueller telling the Trump legal team, according to Rudy G, that there will be no indictment. I will abide the opinion of the Justice Department from 20 years ago. Could very well be. But that's not Mueller's endgame. Mueller doesn't want to bring down the presidency. He wants to provide the information for Congress to do the dirty work. You see, he's not going to do it himself. He's just going to present the raw material for No Justice, No Peace Maxine and the gang to use. That's what you have to understand, in my view. For another view, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Steve Cortez, CNN, a political commentator, and also the former head of Trump's Hispanic, I don't know why I can't speak the language, Trump's Hispanic Advisory Council. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan, Amy. Thanks for having me.
So what was your take on Rudy's pronouncement?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think he's right. And I'm glad that the Trump legal team seems to be taking a less conciliatory approach. I think they cooperated, frankly, too much with Mueller in the past. And I actually got to talk to the president myself about this. And I said, you've got to get more defiant with him. And I totally agree with you. The end game here, it's not about justice. It's not about an indictment, which is probably legally impossible. I don't think it's about subpoena. It's about creating a narrative that they can then hand over to what they hope will be a Democratic House come January of 2019 to proceed with impeaching the president. And that is what it has always been about. I believe that the mainstream media, the so-called resistance, a healthy part of the Democratic Party, they have never come to terms with what happened in 2016. They literally cannot accept it. And so because of that, they want to try to overturn the will of the people and the electoral revolution that we achieved in 2016. But rather than doing it the right way via votes and via the democratic process and debate, they want to try to use impeachment. And I'm trying to shout from the rooftops every chance I get to Republican voters, get motivated about November. Even though Trump's not on the ballot officially, he is unofficially, tacitly on the ballot because this is about impeachment.
Yeah, so you think if the House flips to Democratic, then they'll definitely have an impeachment proceeding?
I think they'll at least begin the proceedings. I think it would be political suicide for the Democrats to actually impeach the president. I think as it did with Bill Clinton, it would actually make the president stronger and more popular. It would actually create some sympathy for Trump, which isn't a really easy thing to do, to be quite honest. So I think it would be politically dumb, and they might be able to restrain themselves, but they might not. And I think the proceedings at the least would begin. And my guess is it would come to a vote. Now, I obviously hope this doesn't happen. I hope they don't take control of the House. I hope there is no Speaker Pelosi or, Speaker Maxine Waters, God forbid, or somebody like that. But if they do gain control of the House, I think they're going to at least pursue it. They're going to at least go down that path. I'm not sure they go all the way there over the cliff, but they might. But this Mueller's probe, Dan, I think you're just exactly right. This is not about justice. This is a political operation. And the more we learn, by the way, this is fascinating. I would encourage all your listeners to read the New York Times reporting on this week on Crossfire Hurricane, as the FBI operation was called, which sounds like it should be a game on PlayStation that my son is playing, right? the more we read about the corruption of the Obama Department of Justice and FBI, the more we learn, I think, that the accusers of Donald Trump actually are guilty of the very crimes which they're trying to affix to Donald Trump. That's the irony here. They're committing the crimes that they're trying to manufacture a case against Trump on.
Right. But to your point, and I think that's right, if you think that this is going to be decided on the merits in terms of the decision by Democrats, were they to gain control of the House, even if they saw their deficit in the Senate increase, there is so much pressure from what is the modern 21st century Democrat Party, which is Antifa and P-hats and socialists, so much pressure and to pursue impeachment, to go the distance with respect to Trump. And we saw it again, this underreported story, but Tuesday's elections on the Democrat side, you have moderate Democrats turned out by hard left Democrats. There is this move hard left, and it's happening within the primaries. You're starting to see it in the primary season. The idea that the revolt of the socialists against sort of the corporatist Democrats ended when Hillary Clinton was nominated and Bernie Sanders was dispatched. No, it's been redoubled.
Mm-hmm. No, listen, that's a, it's a good point. And again, that may very well happen. I think if the Democrats were to take control, if they win in November, to me, the tip off will be, is Nancy Pelosi elected speaker? Because she has already publicly talked against impeachment proceedings. Years ago, when there was somewhat of a movement, when they controlled the House, there was somewhat of a movement to impeach George W. Bush, if you remember, you know, the supposed war criminal.
Right.
She was the one who stopped it then as Speaker. So, listen, I hate to in any way praise Nancy Pelosi, but I think she is politically more astute than some of the hard lefties in her party. So if she's elected Speaker, my guess is they don't go the distance for impeachment. If she is not reelected Speaker, and if they put somebody left of her, which is insane to me that there's even space to the left of her. But if they do, then that tells me they are hell-bent on impeachment, and we're going to have that fight, which would be terrible for the country. But I will say, ultimately, I think it'll actually be good for Donald Trump. So it doesn't worry me as a Trump partisan that much, but I'd still rather not have the fight. Let's keep the House. Let's make sure that the voters know in November that it's not just, you know, that local person, that the congressman or senator that they're voting for. It's an impeachment referendum. Come November. And Donald Trump's popularity is rising, admittedly from low levels, but it's rising. And his popularity on issues is not low at all. It's actually huge on things like the economy, things like Korea. So, you know, I'm going to be out there as much as I can on shows like yours, on television, writing, pounding the table about the successes we've had so far, the future successes that are possible, but that can all be unraveled if we hand the House, if we hand the keys to the car to the Democrats who are desperate. At least a healthy portion of them, desperate for impeachment.
Now, Amy, you know my policy with respect to using sports metaphors for politics.
Nobody can. it bothers you unless you do it yourself.
Correct. That's my policy.
So here we go.
So I may have to make an exception for Steve because he wrote a piece, Washington Examiner, that compared Trump
to
the greatest coach in the history of organized sports, the Wizard of Westwood, John Wooden. And Trump retweeted it. Of course he did.
There's something positive about me. Retweet.
Positive. I mean, comparing him to John Wooden and 10 championships in 12 years, Steve, get a hold of yourself.
A bit of a stretch. I'll be the first to admit that. But hey, I got him to retweet me. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Has that happened before?
Which has bothered me. I mean, because I've given blood for this man on television, taking on CNN and MSNBC. He has never tweeted me before this. So it's about time, but I'm not holding a grudge. Obviously his recent win streak is not comparable to the Wizard of Westwood. But my point is that he's on a win streak, and a pretty major one, and one that the media does not want to talk about, mainstream media. And I'll give you an example from yesterday. He had a meeting of a lot of California officials who oppose California's sanctuary state policy, which is just utter insanity, in my opinion. And a lot of the local people there, sheriffs, mayors, county folks, oppose it, and they're starting to actually pass ordinances to that effect. So he had them to the White House to have a meeting about sanctuary cities. He was asked by a mother of a victim of an MS-13 criminal. He was asked a question about MS-13, which is probably the most vicious gang that has ever operated in America. Scary stuff. It's something that we've got to nip in the bud immediately. Mm-hmm. And responding to that, he said, these people are animals, talking about the MS-13 gang members.
Right.
All the mainstream media, New York Times, ABC, CBS, if you look at their Twitter feed, all of them tweeted out that the president said that illegal immigrants are animals. It shows you the level of bias, which he didn't say. He said MS-13 gang members are animals. But given that level of bias, I feel sometimes like I have to engage almost in a bit of hyperbole and say that he's the Wizard of Washington because of the recent win streak, because it just gets no credit. And the win streak of hostages returning from Korea, an amazing jobs number, moving our embassy in Jerusalem, getting us out of the awful Iran deal, just one after another ticking off on campaign promises made and promises fulfilled. He's really on a roll, particularly in this month of May. And that was really the point of my article. I hope it becomes Wooden-esque. I hope he has so many victories that, Dan, even you'll agree that I'm not exaggerating.
Well, and he'll need to pen a book of poetry, too.
Right.
All right. So June, right around the corner, June 12th is that scheduled meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. What's your gut feeling? Do you think it's going to happen?
You know, yeah, I'm guessing it will, because I think he's put Kim Jong-un in a corner, quite frankly.
Nobody puts Kim Jong-un in a corner.
That's right.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Or KJU. You know, but no, he has put him in the corner. You know, how? Through tightening the economic sanctions massively, through a lot of diplomatic pressure, mainly through China, because President Trump's the first president in American history who realizes we hold the cards with China, right? China needs us desperately, and we can get them to do the things they should do, like pressure Pyongyang, which they're doing. And then thirdly, I think honestly his rhetoric was important, you know, demeaning him to some extent, calling him Rocket Man. There, you know, there's method to the madness. That was genius, right? Put him in a corner where he knows he has no alternative if he wants to survive, I think, and this country is going to not collapse, that he has to start normalizing, moderating. And what he's already done is, by the way, pretty incredible. So he's already stopped shooting rockets into the ocean. He met with the South Korean leader, promised to negotiate a finally an end of the Korean War, returned our hostages. These are all great positive steps. Now, let's see, you know, is he going to act rationally? Is he going to show up in Singapore and act rationally? No one knows. But President Trump has promised us that he'll walk away. And, you know, he doesn't have to save face. He'll walk away if it's unreasonable. But even the idea that they're meeting to me is a major breakthrough and shows that he is not President Trump. I think in terms of foreign policy has done two things that both Bush and Obama didn't. Number one, he's been really restrained in the use of American might, which I think is terrific. No needless interventions, no nation building. We're going to stop doing that all over the world. But then number two, much more clear eyed rhetoric and admonitions of our adversaries, people like North Korea, letting them know that we're not going to be intimidated or we're not going to cower for them in any sense. And I think we're already seeing the results. We're seeing it there. On the other side of Asia, in Iran, it was announced yesterday that Total, who is a French oil giant, is pulling out of a $2 billion project in Iran because of our sanctions, mm-hmm. our renewed sanctions. So I think we're going to see similar fallout for that regime, for the Tehran regime. This is just smart policy, using the economic pressure that we can and trying to achieve, you know, a more peaceful world. And if he can pull this off in Korea, I think he can. It puts him up there with the statesmen of history. It really does.
He is Steve Cortez, CNN political commentator, also a former head of Trump's Hispanic Advisory Council. His latest piece got the presidential seal of approval,
yes.
The official retweet. Trump's winning streak rivals one of the greatest streaks in sports. You can get it at realclearpolitics.com or washingtonexaminer.com. Steve, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a great day.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, we talked about this yesterday in the inaugural edition of a new segment, Why Dan Proft is Single, in addition to the fact that nobody wants to be with me. But I'm the one being the arbiter in this segment. Lucas Glover.
Oh, yeah.
Lucas Glover, PGA Tour pro. He's made $20 million during his almost two-decade career on the tour, including a U.S. Open. But he hasn't won a major in about a decade. And you know who doesn't like it when he doesn't do well in majors?
His wife.
Krista Glover does not like it. What she does is kick the stuffing out of him.
She does.
And she doesn't perform,
you know,
well.
She biatch slaps him because that's, you know, it's a form of motivation for her. I mean, for him to do better in the next tournament.
Well, she does that. She also threatens to take their two kids, 6 and 3 years old, away so that he'll never see them again. That's what she did.
Wow, she had a shot of the cray-cray, huh?
And don't think the mother-in-law is exempt because she goes after the mother-in-law, too. Yesterday, the 911 call was released, and it was really a family affair. You got to hear from both Krista and Lucas. Here it is.
911, what is your emergency?
I've been attacked by my mother-in-law.
Okay. You said you were attacked by your mother?
Yes. And my mother-in-law.
Is she still there?
Yes. She's in here. She's locked herself into the room, and she's attacked us.
How did she attack you?
I don't know.
How did she attack you?
Hello.
Hi, this is St. John's County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
We got our lines crossed here. This is the most insane one of the bunch.
Okay, can you tell me what's going on there?
Yeah, my wife has called you, my mom, and now she's trying to blame it on my mother, which is not the case at all. My mother's the one leading us, and my wife has gone crazy. So.
Okay, does she need Fireski to come out there and look at her?
No, I don't think anybody needs to come out here. Thank you, bro.
Okay. Well, we still have deputies that are coming out there just to make sure that everything is okay there. Can I talk to your wife real quick?
No, you cannot. She's in the house with my daughter, and when the deputies get here, they need to talk to the male. That would be me, because these other two are out of their head at the moment.
Okay, sir, but she dialed 911, so I need to speak with her so I can find out what's happening from her side.
Good Lord.
Well, she's going to lie to you. That's what I'm telling you. That's why I answered her phone. She's telling lies, and none of it's true. But I'll let you talk to her, but it's lies.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Hi there.
Hi, is this the person I was talking to originally?
Yeah, we're not having a great experience tonight, unfortunately.
Okay, we do have deputies on their way out there. Can I get your name?
I don't know. Do we need help or not?
We've got deputies coming out there already, okay?
Okay, thank you.
What is your name?
Yeah, we're going to go.
Can I get your name, ma'am?
Yeah, we're going to go.
And
did you hear the kids crying in the background? That's a hot mess. I feel bad for them.
And Krista Glover was the one taken into custody. And you'll recall that she was taken into custody according to the police report.
Oh, she started straddling the windows or kicked out the windows?
Yeah, tried to damage the car in the back. Said the police officers were going to lose their jobs when she told the PJ about this. Told the police officers this is why cops get shot in the face.
I think she's... has some issues.
Could you imagine?
Needs some counseling.
You play golf. Could you imagine standing over a 20-foot double breaker for the win with that woman in your head? Whew.
I think he needs to file some papers, if you know what I mean.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and I got some good news for you. Much to the chagrin of Democrats, Hillary Clinton won't go away. She just keeps touring around, making whatever change they'll offer her.
Yeah, I mean, she's a honey making money. She's got to support herself.
Sure, you know? She does. Yeah, pay her mortgages and whatnot.
Zzzzzz.
She sat down with Australia's first Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, to talk about women in politics and how unfair it is that women are judged on their appearance, Amy. You know the sting of which Hillary speaks.
I know the pain firsthand.
Well, you know, look, the double standard is alive and well, and it is more difficult for women in public positions. We'll talk about politics, but it's true in business, it's true in the media, it's just true across the board, because there are expectations about women's appearance that are deep in our collective DNA, so that people feel free to comment either favorably or unfavorably about hairstyles, clothing, fashions, and all the rest of it. Now, some of that is because we are still getting used to seeing women in these roles. When you are the only woman doing something, or you are the first woman doing something, there is no basis of comparison. And so the attention is, you know, really focused on the superficial, in part because people are trying to make sense of it. You know, in politics, men come in all sizes and shapes. All kinds of hairstyles or no hair at all. And it is not remarked upon because you are used to seeing men in these roles.
Don't hate Hillary because she's beautiful is the takeaway. Now, let me just point
people
out.
People do. I mean, but, look, you know, but listen, we ripped on J.B. Pritzker and have been about you know, his weight.
If Donald Trump wore a potato sack to a presidential debate, I would comment on that as well. By the way, have people commented on Donald Trump's appearance and his hair and it? I mean,
and his orange skin and his.
Have we commented?
People have.
Have we commented on that walking Krispy Kreme, Chris Christie?
Yeah, we.
I mean,
so men are not immune to this type of behavior and shame.
This is a narrative that they wish was true. It has to be true because it gives them a rationale to be fighting against something, this heroic struggle against people that are judged, or people that judge them on their appearance. Everybody gets judged by everybody on their appearance.
They do.
And do women judge other women based on their clothing or appearance?
That's why half the women that were surveyed watch the news. They watch the news to see what the women are wearing and what their hairstyle is and what their makeup is.
Well, Hillary Clinton addressed that.
Oh, she did?
Yeah. And let's do a little bit of a comparing of notes here in terms of her prep time each day versus your prep time.
Okay.
Let's say you spend, as a woman, an hour a day doing your hair and makeup.
Dear, who's got time?
And I had a campaign of about 600 hours because it was 600 days. So you divide that and think of how many weeks you are spending doing your hair and makeup. I mean, it is exhausting. It is a time suck. And, yeah, and sure. You know, you finish it, you do the best you can, and then...
More Bondo, boys.
Somebody is always going to say, oh, can you believe she wore that? Or, it's kind of funny. But it also is a serious way of undermining women's confidence and putting women on the defensive. If you remember, our current president, when he was running for the Republican nomination, insulted women's looks repeatedly, including the one woman on the stage who was vying for the Republican nomination. He didn't attack her successful business background or her views on issues. He attacked her face, and he attacked the women's faces of commentators and interviewers who were asking him things. Now, why did he do that, other than the fact that he is what he is? But why did he do that? Because it was a way of undermining the women he was insulting.
The insidious nature of commenting on people's physical appearance or mannerisms. I mean, certainly the idea that anybody is exempt from Trump's name-calling is sort of laughable, but okay.
I thought he did to be kind of, you know, edgy, provocative, different. I didn't think he was doing it as a way to undermine his opponents. I thought he was just trying to be funny.
Well, I think that's
relevant.
I mean, I think to some extent that's who he is. You know, you attack him, he attacks you back, and you get into this kind of mud throwing contest of sorts. But I think it is to marginalize or to create a brand on somebody else, right? So low energy Jeb. Little Marco,
little tiny
lion Ted. So whether it's behavior or appearance, but I mean, I just this just goes back to sort of this problem that the left has. On the one hand, they're hell and ready. You know, I am woman. Hear me roar. Get away from me, men. I don't need your helps. Just stand aside. On the other hand, they're delicate flowers who have to have their beauty reinforced, or there can be no comment on their appearance. Otherwise, they descend into a puddle of tears. So which is it?
Well, first of all, I mean, an hour, if she gets her hair and makeup done, so she shouldn't be complaining. I don't think she did the work herself. Okay?
Yeah, well, whoever did it, I would be bragging about it.
Should have been fired. She could have had more, you know, likable pantsuits.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, more flattering pantsuits like the ones Kim Jong-un wears.
You know what? I think they have the same seamstress.
The same inseam, too. So, I mean, I think they could do like a little...
But we always,
you
know, we always joke around. And here's a great example, because our signal's out right now, in case you haven't known. So people are listening on the app, so thanks for that.
Or if you're in the building, stop by and we'll put you on the air.
So B. Davis's bowling ball tweeted, I'm guessing either Bruce Rauner crashed his motorcycle into the broadcast tower or J.B. Pritzker is standing between the tower and my car.
J.B. Pritzker is actually on top of the transmitter. He's swatting down military planes as they come by to try and...
I mean, Hillary, I hate to tell you, but we do it to men. We do it to women. We do it to ourselves.
Well, that doesn't explain the rage of the vocal minority, Amy. The rage against women, not against the machine, the rage against women.
And there is a big audience for that, I regret to tell you, that there is still a very large proportion of the population that is uneasy with women in positions of leadership. And so the easiest way to kind of avoid having to look at someone on her merits is to dismiss her on her looks.
I have to tell you, if I heard that argument one more time, Hillary Clinton lost because men weren't ready to have a woman in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
That's not true at all. And stop saying it.
30 million women voted for Trump.
30 million. Okay.
So
it's not because they're afraid of a JJ in the Oval Office.
Hello.
Well, we're not on the air anyway, so the FCC can't. We got to let me be, so let me be.
Okay, Eminem. I don't know which is more offensive, the JJ comment or that Slim Shady attempt.
They're not listening anyway.
But Hillary Clinton, no, she is, you know, but again, the victim role. And,
oh, is there more?
This is her way of redefining the deplorables as the rageaholics.
There is this anger, even rage, about women seeking power, women exercising power. And people fall back on these attacks, like you're a witch or you should go to prison or whatever it is. And the enthusiasm with which that is generated speaks to a much deeper sense of alienation that people still have toward women leaders. And you know, it's not a majority, thank goodness, it's not. But it's a very vocal minority, at least in my country.
In my country.
My country.
Yes, in my country, the misogynist rageaholics stopped me from being president. But here's the thing. So she sort of contradicts herself right there, doesn't she, when she says it's about appearance, you're being unfairly judged about appearance. Then you're being unfairly judged about your conduct. Because lock her up had nothing to do with her pantsuits. It had to do with her selling the Secretary of State's office to enrich herself and her family.
Right.
So that's off limits, too. Everything's off limits with Hillary.
They thought that they were above the law, the Clintons, that they didn't have to abide by the same rules that we do. And when she was so casual, like, oh, did I clean my server, like, with a cloth? I mean, she didn't even realize the magnitude of what was going on until she lost the election. But I saw it going the whole time thinking, she's not going to win.
Yeah, she is like the City of Chicago's Department of Transportation. Only compliments are accepted. No criticisms.
Hear about the big stories of the day. Then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. So the FCC
won't let me be. Amy, favorite boy band?
90 Degrees.
Not a boy band. 98 Degrees? I don't know. Not much of a fan.
How about 98 Degrees. I saw them in Iowa City.
How about the Backstreet Boys with Bad Boy Donnie Wahlberg? Yeah.
That's Backstreet Boys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
Hanging Tough. Whoa.
Oh,
whoa,
whoa. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's your favorite boy band, right?
Yeah, it certainly is. It's a lot of competition, but
they're bad.
They are Hanging Tough because they're back with a new song.
Called Don't Break, Fall Down and Break Your Hip?
That's what it should be called. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Breaking my hip would be better.
Gosh, this song is awful.
Oh, yeah. We're going to take it down a notch. Does it make you want to pick up on your things and drive away like a Okay, I mean, there's nothing more depressing than seeing pot bellies on your favorite boy band. It's like seeing Joe Louis be a greeter at Caesar's Palace.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You're familiar with our recurring Campus Beat segment. Well, it's the segment where we keep you apprised of what's happening in higher education and more so at the grade school and high school level, too. Things like Texas Tech University Workshop, where individuals who are transitioning to another gender identification can work with speech pathologists on campus to improve their vocal presentation to make it more consistent with the gender they're choosing.
So they're going to start talking like this?
Yeah.
They're going to be Jim?
Exactly.
Instead of talking like this, if they're Sally.
You could be a guest lecturer at Texas Tech, the Red Raiders, for that. We tell you stories about Yale University, the great strides Yale is making when it comes to the presence of an emotional support animals on campus for their undergrads.
14, why are you looking at me when 14 you're talking about support animals?
14x increase in the last year on campus at Yale. Support hedgehogs, dogs, and the like.
Any insects? Any goats? Miniature horses?
Much more liberal is their policy when it comes to pets, emotional support animals, than, say, United Airlines. So happy to know.
Okay. So they can bring their support animals into lecture hall with them, right?
Yeah. I think so. There's some
actually,
of the emotional support animals can audit classes there, too. Get tenure. Of course, we talked yesterday, our very own U of I here, the push by the Graduate Student Union to have STEM workers, right, your scientists, your engineers, refuse to be employed by defense contractors to strike a blow against the military-industrial complex.
So why would you want to hurt your own country?
Well, there's a lot of questions about what's happening on college campuses that defy common sense, so we needed to bring in an expert, and we've done so with our next guest, Heather McDonald, who's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. You, of course, know her, among other things, from her bestseller, War on Cops. She's got a new book coming out, The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University and Undermine Our Culture. Heather, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Dan and Amy. It's always a pleasure.
And building off of our reference to Illinois and STEM graduates there, Peace in City Journal about the STEM fields and diversity being elevated over, proficiency in science, technology, engineering, and the like, and how that harms sciences. Explain.
Well, the diversity crusade has already torpedoed the humanities, the social sciences, and it's about to destroy America's massive advantage in science. The assumption is that if a scientific lab does not have a 50-50 representation of males and females, the only possible reason for that can be discrimination and sexism. The federal government is putting enormous pressure on scientific laboratories to hire scientists not just by gender, but by race. Merit no longer counts. And the universities are quite eager to go along with this idea. Medical schools have massive racial preferences for the students that they admit. Black students are admitted with MCATs. These are the standardized medical, SAT-type scores, tests to get into medical school. Black students are admitted with the lowest tier of MCAT scores that would be mostly an automatic reject for white and Asian students. and those type of preferences continue throughout the residency, and the National Institutes of Health put enormous pressure on labs that are working on finding a cure for cancer, say, or Alzheimer's disease, that if they don't have a sufficient number of so-called underrepresented minorities working in their on their cancer grants, they won't get them renewed. So this is an absolute insanity. It ignores the fact that there are different distributions of interests and of skills across different populations. The expectation that absent bias, we'd have absolute proportional representation of genders or different ethnic groups is preposterous, but it is going to set us way back and destroy things that are absolutely essential to human thriving.
Well, it also goes only one direction. As we know from the data, the majority of BAs and advanced degrees in virtually every field, except some of the STEM fields, are earned by women. So why is there not the concern that men are falling behind when women are earning 60% of those degrees?
Excellent point. And it's amazing. Those facts are absolutely true. And in a few of STEM fields like gynecology, females are now about 82% of all gynecology residents and obstetricians. Again, nobody complains about that. And yet, despite that fact, and men, you know, God bless them, they continue to excel at the very highest reaches of mathematical reasoning and physics, but when it comes to average skills, they are falling behind. And yet, if you look at every single big liberal foundation, as well as the federal government, spending our taxpayer dollars, there is this obsession about promoting females. You can, if you're a male, forget it. You're not going to get, you know, a government-funded summer science program. You're not going to get help in coding skills. Instead, we've got all these girls who code, Latinas, science programs, as if, you know, the females are still being discriminated against. I don't know about you, Amy, but I have never been discriminated against in my life. I was in college a few years after my college went co-ed. Mm-hmm. If ever there would have been a time when there might have been discrimination against females, maybe it would have been then. Never happened. I've had enormous support from every professor I've ever had. I know I've been the so-called beneficiary of gender preferences all my life, being on panels, whatever, because the poor, hounded, harassed organizers feel like they damn well better put on have female representation. The idea that females are living in a world of discrimination against them today is just preposterous.
Oh, it's fake news. I mean, but when did this whole diversity mania, when did this begin? Like, what was the genesis of this? How did it start?
Well, it began in the 1960s with pressure, the federal government feeling like we needed to do more for civil rights, and certainly, you know, this country has a very deplorable, shameful history of the most vicious discrimination against blacks. And fortunately, in the 60s, we started passing federal laws to say this is no longer acceptable. We are going to transform this country. We did, but Lyndon Johnson came up with the idea that it's not enough to simply remove barriers. You had to have affirmative action to try and engineer racial equality. When that meant simply making sure that employers were not discriminating against blacks, doing outreach that was equal-handed, that's fine. But that idea immediately morphed into the idea of racial quotas. There were legal rulings from the Supreme Court that said that any type of job qualification, however neutral in intent, such as asking for a high school degree to work a machine that required knowledge, say, of reading, if that neutral job qualification had a disparate impact on blacks because blacks had fewer high school degrees, you had to throw it out. And you started having demands for preferences, and females then hijacked that and said, well, we want preferences too. And now you have the assumption, and the universities, to get back to our theme, they are the main drivers of this idea that any lack of equal representation in any field, whether it's journalism, history, or a oncology lab, is bound to be the product of discrimination as opposed to, again, different skills, different interests.
So what do you think the end game is here, or the way back from the precipice, if we're not over the edge? Amy Wax, a Penn law professor, suggests that basically you need to just shut down the Ivy League schools and start over. They're beyond salvaging. Brian Kaplan at George Mason University has written a provocative book. We've had him on the show, called Against Education, where he basically, you know, takes the, well, to borrow a Timothy Learyism, you know, dropout approach to higher education, that you, in the era of technology and ubiquity of practicums like this Heterodox Academy that's being started, or the Khan Academy, some of these other things, forget the traditional four-year university, which is just a totalitarian re-education center. What do you see as the future of higher ed, the college campus?
Well, I have nothing but contempt for the current state of higher education. I beg any alumnus not to give money to his school unless you have done complete due diligence and made sure that it is still teaching, if it ever did for the last 40, 50 years, the classics of civilization, the high points of thought, creation of beauty, without a political axe to grind. And if it is engaged in this diversity nonsense, please do not give money. But I think maybe we do need homeschooling for college. It's not enough to homeschool your kids in K through 8. You say you guys are starting to cover what's happening in elementary and high schools. Rightly so. I mean, the trans crusade, stripping children of their innocence, of their fortunate ignorance about matters sexual, is starting earlier and earlier to try and brainwash these kids with premature knowledge of sexuality. But we need homeschooling for college. On the other hand, I don't agree with Kaplan. I think that he, as I read him, he takes a very disparaging attitude of the humanities generally.
Yeah.
I think it would be a big, big loss for our society if there was not a place that we could somehow recreate and recover where people would be able to lose themselves in beauty and greatness. And the university has stood for that.
There is such a place. It's called Hillsdale College.
Well, I was just teaching there for 10 days, and it was really a relief. I kept waiting that I'd turn the corner and I'd come across the Gender Studies Center, and it never happened. It was really a just an extraordinarily shocking experience that there still is a place where they're not, you know, in an ordinary college. Every other word out of the president's mouth at this point, whether it's Yale or Georgia State, is diversity, 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 racism, racism, racism. And that's not what you hear at Hillsdale.
One of the last outposts of Western civilization. That's right. She is Heather McDonald, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow, author of the bestseller War on Cops. Her new book, forthcoming, The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University and Undermine Our Culture. Heather, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan and Amy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
That'd be a fun foursome. Think about it.
I'll think about that. But right now we need to take notice of this. Oklahoma woman said a fellow passenger on her flight stepped in to defend her. This is a United flight. After another passenger called her a, quote, smelly fatty, unquote. What grade are we in?
And did she follow up with, my dad is bigger than yours?
Not reported, but this is sort of a nice story.
That sounds great.
Well, I mean, but what the stranger did, because her feelings were hurt.
So what happened? Was she taking up space? Because, you know, some women are and men are so big that their fat goes into your seat.
I'm one of them. Savannah Phillips explained how she was seated next to a man around 60 years old who said he was a comedian. Not very funny. She said the man began to text someone that he was sitting next to a smelly fatty. I was shocked, said Ms. Phillips. It was like confirmation of the negative things I think about myself on a daily basis. Before I knew it, I could feel hot, salty tears coming down my face. I sat and cried silently. I was so hurt. Oh, jeez.
Well, why is she doing looking over at his text message? Well, it's none of her business. Well, but did he call her that to her face?
No, text message. 10 minutes later, another passenger, one Chase Irwin, the GM of Dirk's Whiskey Row, Nashville, came up, tapped the man sitting next to her, saying he needed to talk to him. Irwin then told him they were going to switch seats because he knew the man was texting about Phillips, and he wasn't going to put up with that.
Was he some plane whisperer? All right.
I think he just said, you know, just said no uncertain terms. He said he just happened to see the guy's text messages. How can everybody
what
see
is
this
there
guy's
text
messages?
Is
there a screen he's putting it on? And he started shaking because he was so mad. He knew he had to do something. I wasn't going to wait till the end of the flight to say something. I was going to wait till the end of the flight to say something, but I could not have this guy sit next to her the whole flight and her thinking he's making fun of her. It gets to me deep down when I see someone crying. And when I start crying, it really hit me hard, and I actually got sick to my stomach.
Oh, okay. Let's just relax, Nancy.
Well.
Okay, Sally.
Wow. Tough crowd. Savannah Phillips called Irwin her hero, saying what he did meant the world to her. I was so blessed and happy he was there. I hope it sets a good example for others for what they should do in situations like that to stick up for people when they need help.
Okay. That's a bit of a stretch to call him a hero.
Did you ever know that you're my hero?
No,
Chase
I feel
Irwin.
Sick to my stomach.
By the way,
yes,
it would have been nice had Chase Irwin been at a Cheesecake Factory in Miami this weekend.
Would have been more of a hero. But I mean, that's nice.
Chase Irwin can only be in so many places at the same time.
He won't let anybody be fat shamed. That's for sure.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We are marking the Mueller-versary. Is that what they're calling it?
Yes, it's the one-year Mueller anniversary of the Mueller investigation. So, of course, it's the Mueller-versary. What are you doing?
The traditional gift for the one-year anniversary is paper, right? So the question, I guess, is should Trump get Mueller a pink slip?
I see what you did there.
You see?
You're funny.
I'm no Hollywood screenwriter. That's why we got one to offer witticisms much superior to mine. He's Andrew Klavan. He's also the author of the book, The Great Good Thing, A Secular Jew Comes to Faith in Christ. And he joins us again. Andrew, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. I thought it was funny.
Thank you very much. And that is a Hollywood screen. He wrote True Crime, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about that? So what do you think about the Mueller investigation 1 year in? How's it going?
Well, first of all, I said when they appointed Mueller that I thought it was one of the biggest mistakes ever, that they should never have allowed this to happen. I have real problems with the whole special counsel law to begin with. But look, the New York Times, in one of its most shameful episodes, published a piece this morning basically trying to excuse the fact that the FBI and CIA planted spies within the Trump campaign. And they ran this story as if this somehow was going to protect and indemnify Comey and the FBI and the CIA against the Inspector General's report that's coming out to talk about this investigation. you know, I really feel that very slowly Donald Trump has been completely vindicated in this, that this was a witch hunt, that this was a what one of the FBI agents called an insurance policy against what they expected was the wildly unlikely event that Donald Trump got elected. I think this is a political hit. And I really do think that they have made Trump could not made himself look as good as they have made him look. I think that, you know, if you have not got evidence, first, not just that the Russians are always trying to affect our elections, and we are always trying to affect theirs. So I'm not comparing Russia to the U.S., that's not what I'm saying, but I'm just saying this is kind of spycraft, this is what we all do to each other. If you can't prove first that the Russians actually affected the election, and I see absolutely no evidence of this, it sounds like a bunch of, you know, Rocky the Squirrel, Boris Badenoff spies putting up Facebook posts. If you can't prove that they actually did something, then I don't even see why there's a crime to begin with, you know. And if all you can prove is that people talked to some Russian or somebody knew a Russian or somebody once read, you know, From Russia with Love, I don't understand how you launch a major, major, major investigation, including spies within a campaign,
right,
of a political campaign. I mean, this is real tin pot dictator stuff. And I really do believe that what this should be called now is Obamagate. Obama ran the federal government like a Chicago style machine. No offense, Chicago, but that's what he was doing. I think it's terrible.
Yeah. Well, do you think President Obama ordered the spy to infiltrate Donald Trump's campaign?
Well, I certainly think he knew what was going on. There are some of the Strzok and Page emails, you know, these two FBI lovers who were emailing back and texting back and forth about how much they hated Trump. Somebody said, you know, the White House is in charge of some of this, that the White House wants to, you know, be in control of some of this. I don't know. I don't think nobody outside of the investigators know at this point, you know, how much the White House knew, but they certainly knew it was going on. They certainly must have known that this was happening. And, you know, when you compare it to the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email, and it was the same group of people who were doing both things. They were investigating Hillary Clinton's use of email, a private email server when she was Secretary of State. They were investigating that. They were giving immunity to everybody they met. They were letting people pretend they were her lawyers so that they had lawyer-client privilege. They didn't put her under oath when they were questioning her. James Comey exonerated her, which wasn't even his job. His job was just to pass on the information to the Justice Department, but he himself said the Justice Department was so compromised that he didn't trust them. So he exonerates her on television, and then they plant spies in the Trump campaign. Look, you know, if this wasn't political shenanigans, if this wasn't overstepping by a Justice Department that felt so protected by the Obama administration and so protected by the fact that they were certain Hillary Clinton would win, I don't know what else to call it. I do not understand how they can justify the disparity between the way they let Clinton's obviously illegal activity slide and the way they burrowed in to a political campaign to prove something that may not even have had an underlying effect. You know, there may not even have been an underlying crime there at all. I think Donald Trump, you know, people keep on the left and the media keep teasing Trump about his obsession with this. I don't blame him for being obsessed with it. You know, I mean, if the FBI were coming after me for something I didn't do, I'd be pretty obsessed with it, too.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just think it really has been shameful.
I want to have you arbitrate something that's tangentially related here. Michael Avenatti, I don't know if you've seen him. He's only been on the cable news channels 147 times in the last 10 weeks.
I don't think he's getting enough airtime.
And he's also facing a disbarment investigation. So that's Michael Avenatti. You got Michael Cohen, who we're learning with each passing day, you know, who he was leveraging his relationship with Trump to get money from. And then you got Eric Schneiderman, who's not only some sort of sexual deviant, he also apparently may have been leveraging the state attorney general's office to get PR contracts for his ex-wife. Could you adjudicate, Andrew Klavan, who is the biggest scumbag lawyer of the three?
I think they ought to start a firm together.
Yeah, right.
So we can all find, we all know where to find them. You know, these guys really are, you know, they're not just bad guys. It's the people who protect them and hire them, including Trump. I mean, I don't know why. Well, I do know why Trump is associating with, this sort of make-believe thug like Cohen, which is what he is. I guess the thing is, if you live a bad life, if you live a life where you're cheating on people and you're sleeping with people you shouldn't sleep with, you got to have these guys to protect you. From the press. And what's interesting about Cohen is what an incompetent he was.
Yeah, remarkable.
He sold access to Trump. He never gave anybody access to Trump. He was trying to keep these, this porn star silent. Now she's on television. I was actually in Oregon on vacation last week. I was driving by a motel and there was a big sign that said, Stormy Daniels will be stripping here next week.
You know? She's coming to Chicago too, June 14th, 15th, and 16th.
Sure. Amy's got that on her calendar. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, it's become quite a circus.
It is sad that these are the people who consider themselves our betters and they consider themselves America's elite.
Well, also, one other thing on this topic, though, especially with Cohen, he is exactly as you just described him. And yet the Fortune 500 CEOs are trying to buy him off because they want it because they're rent seekers. They want to buy everybody off that has any relationship whatsoever with the halls of power. So they're complicit, too. Now, of course, they're, distancing themselves from him. It was a big mistake, and they're going to bring Hillary in for brown bag lunch and give her $250,000 to make it all better, whatever they're going to do. But it says something about corporate culture and the nexus between big government and big business.
And it's also kind of interesting that you can basically trace how Hillary Clinton sold influence through the Clinton Foundation and actually did favors for people, both in New York when she was a senator and when she was Secretary of State. You can trace the money. You know, Bill Clinton was getting $500,000 for speeches in Moscow while the Russians were trying to negotiate our taking over some of our uranium supplies. And that stuff was going on, like, in plain sight. But it's interesting that Michael Cohen can't show anything for his labors. It would be absolutely bizarre if it turned out that Trump actually has more integrity as a politician than the Clintons did, because Trump has behaved certainly has behaved like a New York City real estate developer, which is kind of one of the lower forms of life. And yet it looks like he's actually been more honest as president than Hillary Clinton ever was as anything. And I just think that that's kind of interesting. It really is our skewed perceptions that are created by the media. And if I can just add one other thing,
yes.
This week, the media disgraced itself at a level I can't remember ever seeing, between their coverage of Israel fighting Hamas, which made it look as if Israel were somehow to blame for this invasion of their territory. They just, that line that where Donald Trump yesterday called the gangsters who come out of Mexico, that MS-13, he called them animals, and the New York Times said that he had called all immigrants animals.
Yeah, well, ABC did it too, MSNBC, it was awful. That was
this is
irresponsible.
They have really become, in their rage against Trump, they've become exactly what Trump says they are.
So yesterday, the president's financial disclosures were released. I mean, it's not as comprehensive as a tax return, but it shows that he paid Michael Cohen six figures. It doesn't say exactly for what, but do you think anybody will even care? I mean, does everyone just assume that he paid off
Trump,
the porn star?
I think Trump is indemnified by the fact that he's never pretended to be anything but what he was. He is a guy who wrote a book bragging about the fact that he slept with other men's wives, bragging about it. He is a billionaire playboy. I mean, I keep joking that if he hadn't slept with Stormy Daniels, he'd have been called before the Billionaire Playboy Association, and they'd have asked him why not, I mean, this is who he has always been. We knew it when we voted for him. It is not a surprise. And, the only thing that I can say, and I really feel this is a kind of confusing fact, I think the guy has been a great president so far. I think he is not a good person. I would not allow him to be alone in a room with my daughter. But he has been a terrific president, and I think that that's something we're all going to have to think about. What are the ramifications of having a guy who has lived the life that he lives, who has said some of the things that he said, and yet seems to be doing a terrific job? I mean, his courage in this Israel thing of moving the embassy, of keeping the promise that Clinton, Bush, and Obama also made, his cutting taxes, his dialing back regulations, his withstanding this onslaught of a storm of a dishonest media trying to bring him down, it's been remarkable. It's been remarkable to watch. And yet at the same time, when I hear the things that he did and did to his wife and did to in the way he treated women, I can't just say, just shrug that off. I mean, I think that that is part of who he is as well. We in the arts know that many bad people do great things. You know, many of the greatest art ever created was created by people I would not want to sit and have a drink with. And I think this is true of our politics, too. And maybe the only difference between a guy like Trump and guys like the Clintons and the Kennedys is that Trump has been very open about who he is.
He is Andrew Klavan, who's a good guy and a great artist. He is a screenwriter and also the author of the book, The Great Good Thing, A Secular Jew Comes to Faith in Christ. Andrew, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.